one into the night, deep into right, way out of here.
Swung on,
did it,
crushed, and the Phillies are going to lead it.
Harper, the swing of his life.
The 0-2 pitch, swing and a miss, struck him out.
From WHYY, it is hitting season. Hey there, podcast pals. I'm John Stolness from The Good Fight. You can follow me on X and Blue Sky at John Stolness. Coming up, we're going to recap this Philly series against the Arizona Diamondbacks on this solo edition of the podcast. Lots of good things happening in Arizona and out west overall. The trip did not end the way the Phillies would have wanted to, with a 1-0 loss on Wednesday, but they do go 6-3. In the three-city, nine-game West Coast road trip, which is always a little bit dicey as you're getting to the end of August. But as we know, this Phillies team really does seem to play their best baseball in August over these last few years. And so the Phillies made up some ground in the National League East, and especially in the wild card race. So we'll talk about where the Phillies stand in terms of playoff positioning. We're also going to look ahead to this weekend series against the Atlanta Braves. Justin and Liz will have a more thorough preview coming up here at the end of the week on Friday, but I'm going to get a jump start on things because this is the biggest series of the Philly season so far. So lots of fun stuff to get to here on this edition of Hittin' Season. Just please want to remind everyone to leave a 5-star rating and a review if you listen to this show over at Apple Podcasts. We'd love to hear what you have to say about this this podcast. And if you do like to watch the show, you can see all of our roundtable editions of the podcast over at our content partner WHYY's YouTube channel. Just subscribe to the WHYY YouTube channel and you will find us there as well. But tell your friends and family members about the Hittin' Season podcast. We're just getting going here during the best part of the season. 1 month to go until October baseball. And I was looking on the baseball reference page, the Phillies 2026 baseball reference page. They're now at over 99%. To make the postseason in terms of playoff odds. So get ready for more October baseball, folks. It is going to happen. Now, I mentioned a second ago, it was a good series against Arizona and it was a good West Coast trip, and it did put the Phillies in position in the wild card race and in the National League East to do themselves a favor here and get themselves a home series, at least in the wild card round, if they have to play it. The Phillies will enter this weekend series, and it's a 4-game series against the Atlanta Braves, but it begins on Friday and goes Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and then it will carry over into Labor Day Monday. So they don't normally do a wraparound series on a Monday, but Labor Day is going to be a time people are going to want to have baseball in front of them. And I think that the Phillies-Braves series is probably going to be the marquee matchup this weekend. So I would not be at all surprised to see if the Phillies and the Braves are on national television and getting some pretty big numbers, because it should. It's two teams that are playing very good baseball right now. The Phillies a little bit hotter than the Atlanta Braves, but the Braves have had some good moments here over the last few weeks. And so as we begin this 4-game series, the Phillies trail the Braves by 4 games. It was 3 games at the end of the game on Tuesday night, but the Braves won on Wednesday. The Phillies lost, and so it goes back to a 4-game deficit in the NL East. So if they split the series, it remains 4 games as the two teams move on. Now the Phillies will get the Braves again next week for a 3-game series in Atlanta. So you'd like to cut into that a little bit. If you win 3 out of 4, you get that lead down to 2 games. And I think, man, that's got to be the goal, especially with 4 games at home and the way the Phillies are playing right now. You'd love to get that lead down to 2 games, because if you win the National League East, you're guaranteed a home playoff series in the wild card round if you don't get one of those top 2 seeds in the National League. And that's really what the Phillies are after. But actually, right now, the Phillies are in a position to have home field advantage in a wild card round, because they enter the weekend 1 game up over the Chicago Cubs. The Brewers came back to beat them 9-5 on Wednesday. And so the Cubs lost. The Phillies lost. The Phillies maintain that 1-game advantage for wild card one. Which would be kind of a fun series if that continued. It looks like the Phillies would play the Braves in that scenario. No, that's not right. The Phillies would play the Cubs in that scenario. They would play the Cubs at home, and the Braves would get, I think it's the Diamondbacks are in the final wild card spot right now. Or maybe it's the Padres. It's either the Padres or the Diamondbacks. I didn't look on my phone before we hopped on here about that. But anyway, the Phillies, if they win 3 out of 4, they get the lead down to 2. And if the Phillies somehow and I don't expect this, sweep the four-game series, then they are tied with the Braves for the top spot in the National League East. And at that point, all bets are off because the Phillies would have all the momentum in the world. But the Phillies, as we look back to the Diamondback series, they took 2 out of 3, which is a big deal for them in what is usually a house of horrors for the offense in particular. And the bullpen has had some nightmares there. And I'm not just looking back at the 2023 National League Championship Series. It's been a rough go there for them going back quite a few years. They had not won a series in Arizona going back to the 2023 regular season. Of course, they didn't win any series in Arizona in the playoffs that year. They won a tight pitcher's duel on Monday, 2-1, behind a massive Bryson Stott homer and a Bryce Harper RBI double. Aaron Nola's 5 innings of one-run ball. Aaron Nola's turnaround has been really important to this team. He's throwing really good baseball right now. Also, a big hand to the bullpen in that game. We're going to talk more about the pen in just a second, but they kept Arizona off the board for the final 4 innings after Aaron Nola left the game. McFarland, Kirkring, Raleigh, Alvarado, and Duran. Those are your 5 postseason horses right there. Those are probably going to be the 5 most trusted guys. And, you know, some of them are still kind of shaky, but we'll talk more about the bullpen here in just a second and the turnaround that they have had here over the last few weeks. They won a big pitcher's duel on Tuesday, 7-1. It was a tight game most of the way between Jesus Luzardo and Arizona's star left-hander Eduardo Rodriguez, maybe 2 of the 3 best left-handed starters in the National League going at it in this one. The Phillies got 2 runs in the first off of Rodriguez and got another in the 5th before they piled it on late against Arizona's bullpen in the 8th and 9th innings. And then in the finale on Wednesday, they lost 1-0. But I walk away from the game on Wednesday feeling better about it than not, simply because of the performance of rookie Andrew Painter. And that's where we're going to start here. Andrew Painter has been reborn since coming back from AAA Lehigh Valley. That kid went down to AAA as lost, with as little confidence as I can remember seeing a really good pitcher with good stuff going down to the minors. I mean, he looked like a defeated pitcher up here at the big league level. And credit the Phillies pitching coaches, Caleb Cotham, the folks at Lehigh Valley, the pitching laboratory that this team has down in Clearwater, where they're going to work with guys and they've got all kinds of different ideas. They had Andrew Painter ditch the split finger fastball. They transitioned him to throwing a changeup instead, and that has made all of the difference in the world. And so I guess we are going to see young staff ace Andrew Painter, the prospect we were promised. We are seeing him right now here in 2026, continuing a string of great starts since being recalled from the minors. I think a lot of you were questioning why the Phillies called him up, because he had made 3 starts for Lehigh Valley. A couple of them didn't go well. It definitely was turning around down there, but when they called him up to start in Baltimore, it was a shocker, because we had assumed that he might spend the rest of the season down in Lehigh Valley, but the Phillies needed him. They saw something that he had changed that they believed was sustainable at the big league level, and we are seeing it. They were right. I was wrong. They were right. That's why they do what they do, and that's why I yammer into a microphone that you listen to in your car when you're going to work. That's the difference. It was his best outing as a major league pitcher on Wednesday, pitching 7 shutout innings. He gave up only 2 hits and no walks on the day. He threw 93 pitches, 68 of them for strikes. His max velocity was 98.7 miles an hour. He generated 13 swings and misses in this game, and he threw a first. This is a really important number. He threw a first pitch strike to 18 of 24 batters in this game. In 7 starts, since returning from AAA, he's pitched 40 and a third innings, struck out 38, walked only 13, and has a 3.12 ERA. He has allowed 3 or fewer runs in 6 of his 7 starts since returning from AAA. And I saw this stat with Buster Olney and his podcast, and Paul Himbakitis was mentioning this. The league batting average against Andrew Painter before he went down was 316, and opponents had an on-base percentage of 375 and a slugging percentage of 526. Opponents had an OPS of 901 against Andrew Painter. That's everybody combined had a 901 OPS against Andrew Painter before he was sent down. Since his recall, the OPS is 555 against. Opponents are hitting 179 against him with a 273 on-base percentage and a 282 slugging percentage. What a dramatic turnaround. Hitters were feasting on his fastball. They were sitting on it. They knew he couldn't throw his breaking stuff over for strikes with any regularity. And they were just wailing on a fastball that also lacked spin, lacked movement, because he had said he was gripping the baseball with his split finger delivery before every pitch. And then when he would transition to throwing a four seam fastball with the ball still in his glove and before he started his windup, his fingers were still too far apart and it was causing his fastball to lose spin rate, which causes it to lose a little bit of movement as it's going to the plate vertically or horizontally. That's all been fixed. His fastball, people are swinging through his fastball now, and the changeup. My goodness, the changeup has become a devastating pitch for him. It's such a different changeup depending on when and how he wants to throw it. It's been ranging anywhere from the high 80s in terms of velocity to the low 90s, and it can have anywhere from 8 to 15 inches of movement to the right. If you're a right-handed hitter coming in on you, it's just become a weapon for him. So ditching the splitter entirely, going to a changeup exclusively, he now has three pitches that he can command in the strike zone, all of which are plus pitches. This is the prospect we all were expecting. He is the fourth Phillies pitcher, age 23 or younger, going back to 1913, to throw at least seven scoreless innings while allowing two hits or fewer and no walks. The other pitchers to do that, Curt Simmons in 1953, Art Mahaffey in 1960, and Ray Culp in 1965. A couple other notes. Slangs on Sports put this one out. At 23 years old and 145 days, Andrew Painter is the youngest Phillies pitcher with a scoreless start of seven or more innings since Zach Eflin threw a complete game shutout in July of 2016 at 22 years old and 105 days. Y'all remember that start for sure. Zach Eflin had some days with this team. And the youngest Phillies with a scoreless start of seven or more innings pitched and no walks in the last 40 years, Zach Eflin, we just mentioned him a second ago, he was the youngest of all time. Cole Hamels in August of 2006 was 22 years old and 230 days. Brett Myers in April of 2003 was about 14 days older, 2 weeks older, no, 24 days older than Cole Hamels. And Andrew Painter at 23 years and 145 days, the fourth youngest pitcher in franchise history with a scoreless start of seven or more innings and no walks in the last 40 years. So a tremendous start from Andrew Painter. And as Zach Wheeler is maybe starting to get back to himself a little bit more, Andrew Painter, of all people, has picked up the slack. Right now, in this Phillies rotation, with Aaron Nola suddenly pitching well, looking more like his old self, and Andrew Painter discovering the high-end starter, not a number four guy, not a number five guy, but pitching like a number two right now, and maybe even a little bit better, the emergence of Andrew Painter makes this a much more dangerous team down the stretch because there's no opening in this starting rotation. Zach Wheeler is probably the weakest link at the moment, and I don't expect that to continue. Aaron Nola maybe also. I don't know how much I trust everything I'm seeing from all the starters. But my goodness, right now, there's no easy out. There's no way for an offense to get comfortable against this starting rotation. There's no weak link at the moment. And that makes this team dangerous here in the last month of the season. Makes them dangerous in October. I don't know how the Phillies rotation would shake out, especially in an early series. Certainly you wouldn't need your number four, number five starter in a wild card series. You would need numbers one, two, and three in a wild card. I don't know in a division series if you'd put Aaron Nola out there in a game to start, or if you'd start Andrew Painter. We'll let this last month play out before figuring that all out. But it's really important that the Phillies are getting this kind of production from a rookie. They desperately needed young players to fill in the gaps. There's a lot of players on this team that are over 30, key contributors, and they need the new blood to help keep the ship above sea level. And what Andrew Painter is doing is just that. He's helping to keep this team afloat. He's giving them a great chance to win every time the number five starter spot rolls around. That was not happening earlier in the season. They were automatic losses. That is no longer the case. Now, they lost on Wednesday, but they lost 1-0 because the offense couldn't get a guy to third base, right? The offense didn't get a runner to third base in the game on Wednesday. That's not on Painter. Andrew Painter did what he needed to do, and I feel better about that than I feel bad about the Phillies offense having a really down day in a game in which the Arizona Diamondbacks went to a bullpen game. That shouldn't happen, but it's a getaway day. I can kind of get it. It's the end of a long West Coast road trip. The Phillies have the day off tomorrow, and you have the Atlanta Braves series looking at you straight in the face. If the Phillies were looking past this game a little bit, I don't like that they did that, if that's what happened, but I don't think the Arizona bullpen was that dominant. It just, they did not have great at-bats here on Wednesday, and they paid for it with a 1-0 loss, but Andrew Painter gets hung with the L. No, he doesn't actually, because Jonathan Bolin is the one who came in and gave up the solo home run to James McCann in the eighth inning for the only run. Andrew Painter, great performance from him. Exceedingly encouraging. And I talked about rookies needing to step up, young players needing to give them some production. Just a quick word about Justin Crawford, guys. Just very quietly at the bottom of the lineup, getting stuff done, especially in key situations. Among 155 rookies with at least 80 at-bats with runners in scoring position over the last 10 seasons, Justin Crawford's .341 batting average ranks 10th. The folks directly ahead of him, Ronald Acuna Jr., Yordan Alvarez, and Shohei Ohtani. Justin Crawford has put together great at-bats, puts the ball in play, hits the ball hard with runners in scoring position, a .341 batting average with runners in scoring position as a rookie. Hats off to you. And that's all they really needed from him this year, was at the bottom of the order, get some singles, get some knocks in some key situations, get on base, take some key walks, be a contributor. That is what Justin Crawford is doing. I don't think Justin Crawford's going to be an all-star. I really don't. I mean, I think he could have a career like J.P. Crawford is having, though, in Seattle, where you're kind of like, Crawford's a defense-first guy, and that's why his wins above replacement is usually high. Justin Crawford's not quite that type of a player defensively. But offensively, they have a similar profile. They hit a lot of line drives. They find a lot of holes. If they're going to succeed, they got to have a high batting average on balls in play. And that's been the story for Justin Crawford this year. And he has been contributing at the bottom of the lineup. So two rookies getting it done for the Phillies here as the second half of the season rolls along. All right, let's talk a little Jesus Luzardo. We've been talking about him a lot. I think right now he's the best starter on this team, but it's pretty close because Christopher Sanchez has thrown really well all of a sudden again too. But in the game on Tuesday, Jesus Luzardo was electric going up against Eduardo Rodriguez. He won that pitching duel against another really good left-handed starter. And Jesus Luzardo now has allowed one earned run or less, one or zero, that's the only other number, in 11 of his last 15 starts. One earned run or none in 11 of his last 15 starts. Think about that. One or none in 11 of his last 15. The Phillies have won 16 of his last 18 starts and six in a row. He has 209 strikeouts on the season. That is second in baseball to Toronto's Dylan Cease since the start of 2025 with 425 strikeouts. So 209 on the season, and going back to last year, the second most strikeouts in baseball only to Dylan Cease with 425. At OptiStats had this number, the Phillies' Jesus Luzardo on the road this year, 9-0 with a 1.76 ERA and 116 strikeouts. Since ERA became official in both leagues in 1913, no pitcher has ever finished a season undefeated with an ERA under 2 and 100 or more strikeouts on the road. So what Jesus Luzardo is attempting to do has never been done before, going back to 1913 when ERA became an official statistic in National and American leagues. Jesus Luzardo's ERA, if you go back to May 8th, think about the dark days, was 5.77. On May 8th, Jesus Luzardo had an ERA of 5.77. Since then, in 20 starts, a 2.07 ERA since his start on May 8th. 2.07. That's Jacob Mizorowski territory, folks. A 1.02 whip, just 39 walks in those 20 games with 152 strikeouts. You want to know why Jesus Luzardo has been so dominant? Listen to those numbers again. 152 strikeouts and 39 walks. Lots of Ks, very few bases on balls. That is how you dominate lineups, guys. So who would you rather have starting a game 7? Would you rather have Christopher Sanchez start a game 7 or Jesus Luzardo? Let's compare the numbers, shall we? Jesus Luzardo has a 3.02 ERA overall. Now, again, I mentioned it was 5.77 on May 8th. It's come down from 5.77 to 3.02. It has dropped 2.75 earned run average going back to May 8th. That's insane. A 3.02 ERA compared to Christopher Sanchez's 2.52 ERA. Sanchez has been a little bit more consistent during the course of the entire season. Christopher Sanchez has a lower fielding independent pitching, 2.58 FIP. Luzardo, 2.86. And if you look in terms of wins above replacement, 7.7 baseball reference wins above replacement for Sanchez. The number is 5.6 for Luzardo. Now, that number more heavily weighs ERA, and Sanchez's ERA is half a run better than Jesus Luzardo. If you look at Fangraphs wins above replacement, they take a look at FIP, and those two numbers are closer. But Sanchez still has the edge, 5.7 to 5.0. But let's also, instead of looking at the whole season, what about since the All-Star break? Is it a little bit closer? If you're looking at the hotter pitcher, if you're looking at the number since the All-Star break, right now, Jesus Luzardo has had the better of Christopher Sanchez, but listen to these numbers. It's not by a lot. Since the All-Star break, Jesus Luzardo's ERA is a sparkling 2.12, but Christopher Sanchez's is an almost equally as sparkling 2.25. So I don't know who you start in Game 7. I think I still go with Christopher Sanchez. I'll go with the guy who I think is a little bit more consistent. I think, and his stuff is no less electric than Jesus Luzardo. I am probably leaning towards Christopher Sanchez in that spot, but if I had to go with Jesus Luzardo, I would be tickled because, I mean, he has become a secondary staff ace. The guy, this team has two of the three best left-handed starters in baseball right now going for them. And that's just, you got to throw Chris Sale into the mix, and Eduardo Rodriguez is certainly in the mix there too. In Luzardo and Sanchez, there aren't two more dominant left-handed starters in baseball right now. There was a big series for Bryce Harper. His on-base streak continues. He got on base in all three games in the series, now sitting at 35 games, got on base twice on Wednesday, one of the few players on the Phillies who actually did something offensively. And that followed a performance on Tuesday where he went 4-for-4 in their 7-1 win and had a go-ahead RBI double in the win on Monday. I wrote an article for The Good Fight about the elite Bryce Harper. Yes, he's elite again. He's elite again. And I'm going to look back to his numbers to last year, and it's obvious how much better he is here in 2020. This is elite Bryce Harper. This is elite production in 139 games. He's already played more games this year than he played last year. 132 games. He's at 139. He may play in all 162, guys. He has a 3.8 wins above replacement this year, 3.1 a season ago. The batting average is better, 274 compared to 261 last year. The on-base percentage is way better, 392 compared to 357 a year ago. The slugging percentage is better, a 509 slugging compared to 487 a year ago, and a 901 OPS this year. Last year was 844, a 140 OPS plus, which means he's 40% better than the average hitter in Major League Baseball. Last year it was 128, and he has 98 walks already this season, which leads the National League. Last year, he only had 70 walks. He's already walked 28 more times this year. He leads the National League in walks, as I mentioned. His 901 OPS currently ranks fourth in the National League and sixth among all qualified Major League hitters. Only Yordan Alvarez, Pete Crow Armstrong, James Wood, Shohei Ohtani, and Junior Caminero are the only players with a higher OPS in baseball than Bryce Harper. He's only one of seven players with an OPS over 900. Last year, his 844 OPS was 22nd. That's the difference between good, between very good and elite. He's been one of the six or seven best hitters in baseball. That's elite. That's the difference. If you're looking for, we're not playing word games here. You know, that's the difference. And this run the Phillies are on, they've won 15 out of 18. It's coinciding with Harper having this insane stretch of play. It's coincided with his on-base streak. Over his 30, when he came into the game on Wednesday, in his last 34 games, coming in with a 34 game on-base streak, he was hitting 345 with a 494 OBP and a 588 slugging percentage, good for an OPS of 1082 during his on-base streak. That's a one-to-one correlation between how Bryce Harper plays and how the Phillies do. It just is. And Kyle Schwarber's had a quiet time over that same stretch of games during Harper's 34-game on-base streak. And again, it's now 35. I computed all these numbers before the game on Wednesday. Schwarber is hitting 222 with a 344 OBP, which is decent, but a 444 slugging and an OPS of 788. He's had some big home runs during that time, but Harper's game-to-game consistency has been the true glue for an improved offense. Now, the offense hasn't done quite as great. I think they're getting away from some of the things that they were doing really well in terms of having patient at-bats and working pitchers and all that kind of stuff. They're kind of reverting back to some of their old habits. One of the reasons Seattle got up on them in those first couple of games, and we mentioned this on the podcast last week, is they were starting to throw them more pitches over the plate, throw them more fastballs, lots more fastballs, lots more pitches over the plate, because the Phillies were starting to lay off the stuff outside off the plate. And so they've made that adjustment, and now they're starting to swing more. They're starting to attack more because pitchers were forcing them to do that. And so when pitchers start going back to the old formula, you hope the Phillies will recognize it and go back to being more patient. It should be good for them to know that they have that skill, that there is that button that they can push. Now, make no mistake that one of the biggest reasons, maybe certainly the bigger reason for the Phillies' hot streak of late is the pitching staff. The pitching staff is the biggest reason for this. Since coming out of the Iowa Corn in the Field of Dreams game back on August 13th, the Phillies have posted a team-wide 2.65 ERA. That's second best in baseball. Their 10 strikeouts per nine are also second in baseball, as is their strikeout to walk ratio of 18.5%, the difference between their strikeout rate and walk rate. That's also second best. But if you're looking in terms of offense, what Bryce Harper is doing has been, again, the biggest reason for this offense's success. In August, he's hitting 333, 496, 573. It's his most times on base in a month, or the most times on base in a month by anyone since Aaron Judge in April of last year's, who had 64. And Harper obviously added another few times here in September, but in August, he had the most times on base in a month since Aaron Judge in April of 25. And he had the most walks in a month, 31, since Juan Soto did 31 walks in June of 2024. This is also, keep in mind, happening as Bryce Harper is transitioning back to the outfield. The Phillies outfield, again, was dreadful for most of the year, but you put Bryce Harper back in the outfield, and now all of a sudden you've got an outfield that you don't feel terrible about. It's actually been pretty good. And that production you're getting from right field has been tremendous offensively. Now, and his defense has not really been an issue. One could say that the overall defense of the team has actually improved since Luis Arraez arrived to play second and Bryson Stott got shifted to third base. I saw an insane stat on Wednesday showing that Bryson Stott is among the league leaders in outs above average at third base, which shouldn't be possible given he just started playing there for a month. But he's already making gold glove plays at third base. So you have an improvement at third base defensively, certainly. Arraez is playing a decent second base. Alec Bohm went to first. He's been fine. And Harper's been fine in right field. But you would have thought maybe the offense would fall off with Harper switching to right field. He hasn't played there since 2022. It hasn't. He's been better. He had maybe his best offensive month in a Phillies uniform. Now, he's had a couple of months where he's won player of the month for the Phillies, but I think what he did here in the month of August has been just tremendous. And keep in mind, this is Harper's 15th year in the majors. He's been playing for 15 years in the majors. He's only 33, so it's hard to remember that. But he's putting together the type of season that prime Mike Schmidt would be proud of. Some of those Mike Schmidt early to mid-30s seasons is a lot of fun. He's already matched last year's home run total, 27. And right now, if you're looking in terms of MVP candidates, if he continues to do this, he's going to finish as a finalist. I mean, he's not going to beat out Pete Crow Armstrong, and Ohtani will probably finish ahead of him. But Harper is once again elite. He's once again an MVP candidate. And this is one of the things we were talking about this offseason. Could he get back there? He's back there. And it's great. You know, I just wish that, you know, the player would recognize that, you know, he's how much better he is now than he was last season and would see the difference there. All right. One of the other things that we have to talk about here before we wrap up the podcast is the improvement in the bullpen. The Phillies bullpen has been much better. And if you needed the performance on Monday, but specifically who came into the game and how they performed, is exactly what it will look like in the playoffs. Aaron Nola has to leave the game in the sixth inning. They're trying to get him through the sixth, but he gives up back-to-back walks to start the sixth inning. And he's at 100 pitches, so you got to take him out. So you got to cover the last four innings. You got to cover the last 12 outs. And we got a really good glimpse into how Don Mattingly is going to do this. And he started off with the rookie. He started off with Alex McFarland to come in the sixth and get them out of a tight situation. I think this is someplace we would have seen Ryan Kirkering a lot more often. And Ryan Kirkering always gives up those inherited runners. I mean, it's just, it's very rare you see him get out of an inning like that. And Alex McFarland comes in and he gets a flyout, a strikeout, and a check swing ground out to third base to get out of the innings. I mean, this is... You talk about a clutch pressure situation for a rookie pitcher with unbelievable stuff. He was down in Reading for most of the year. He got called up to AAA, but he was just dominating everywhere he went. And you're watching all these relief pitchers on the Phillies flail and lose games and blow leads. And you're just trying to, why, you know, they brought up Kirkering really fast back in 2023. Why wouldn't you bring up McFarland? Well, they finally do. And now he's getting some super high leverage looks here. Don Mattingly testing the kid out to see what he's got. And what he's got is something pretty special here. I mean, the stuff this kid has, major league hitters don't know what to do with it just yet. And what was really cool was after he gets out of the inning, Aaron Nola is just like nodding his head up and down in the dug, like, yes, yes, this is what we need. That was awesome. Really impressed by the rookie getting him off the hook. You could see it. And Alex McFarland, through his first 10 big league appearances, has an ERA of 0.87, a 0.97 whip, and he has struck out 10 batters in his first 10 big league appearances, and opponents are hitting 147 against him. This Phillies bullpen, going back to August, has the third best ERA in baseball. Did you realize that? The third best ERA in baseball by this Phillies bullpen, 3.10. I was as surprised as you were. They're getting it done. They have, in terms of strikeout rate, 9.5 strikeouts per nine is tied for seventh with the Cincinnati Reds. But if you kind of look in, the number that I really look to with regards to the Phillies is strikeout to walk ratio. And since August 1st, they have the sixth best strikeout to walk ratio. That's important. This team was walking way too many guys before August rolled around. They're one of the worst teams in baseball at that. And right now, you know, since August, the 9.2% walk rate still isn't awesome, but it's certainly not bad. It's certainly not terrible. They are 11th in baseball in walk rate here since the start of August. They're 7th in strikeout rate, as I mentioned. Tied for 6th in strikeout rate at 25.1%. But one of the things we've seen from the Phillies is they have really limited opponents' batting averages. The 214 batting average allowed is 5th best in baseball, going back again to August 1st. So much of what we're seeing from the bullpen, and one of the reasons a lot of these close games are able to stay close, is the bullpen has done a great job. And when you saw that list of relievers that I mentioned come out on Monday, they had to get 12 outs, and they relied on McFarland to get the three toughest outs of the game to get to wriggle out of a jam. Orion Kerkering comes in next, and he pitches a scoreless inning, although it wasn't smooth sailing all the way. He actually gets two outs in the inning, and Raley has to come in and get the final out against the left-hander. So Kerkering needed a little bailing out. Still, I don't feel confident about Kerkering. I don't want to see him on a playoff roster, but I know we're going to, and I know he's going to get a high-leverage moment, and I am fearful. I am 100% fearful. The guy who was really impressive in this game was Jose Alvarado. He's been awful this year. Jose Alvarado has been absolutely brutal all season long. But that was vintage Jose Alvarado in that game on Monday night, where he came in and was throwing 99, but the splitter, he was getting guys to swing over the top of the splitter. And he got out of a little jam in exactly the way that he used to in 2022, 2023, and even parts of 2024. It was great to see. And that's what you need from him. You need that exact kind of stuff, those exact kinds of pitches in that moment. Don't walk guys, throw strikes. That's, if Jose Alvarado's throwing strikes, they're going to be fine. And then Joan Duran came in and sealed the deal in that game, securing the 2-1 win. And it's just great to have that security blanket at the end of the game. Duran's ERA going back to August is 0.6. Tim Mayza, Devin mentioned Tim Mayza, but Tim Mayza is also an important part of this bullpen, has a 0.84 ERA going back to August 1st. That's second best on the team. McFarland, I mentioned 0.96. Jonathan Bolin got a big save during this West Coast road trip when Duran was sick, a 2.03 ERA for him. And then you've got Alvarado, 4.66, Orion Kerkering, 5.40. So not everybody killing it here in the month of August. But Brooks Raley, a 3.52 ERA for the Phillies. He's kind of settled down a little bit. So again, things are settling down a little bit in the bullpen. And I still don't fully trust this batch of relievers, but we don't really have a choice at this point. This is who they've got. This is who is going to be coming out of the bullpen in October for this team. And we've seen bullpens get hot. I go back to 2022. That bullpen was a disaster. They got David Robertson at the trade deadline, and he was good for a month, and then he became totally unreliable. And so they tried Zach Eflin, and they tried Sir Anthony Dominguez, and they tried Jose Alvarado, and they just could never settle on a guy. And it was bullpen roulette throughout the playoffs. No one knew who was closing a game. It was whoever seemed to have the best stuff on that given night. Like David Robertson almost blows game one of the World Series that year. Zach Eflin almost blows a couple of different opportunities. You know, like it was ugly. But in the playoffs, they got hot. A couple of guys got hot. Dominguez and Alvarado specifically got super hot. They rode those two guys relentlessly to the World Series and managed to come within two wins of a championship by doing that. So you hope that this bullpen has some kind of revelation in them over here during the last month of the season that they carry into October, and you finally start to get some roles settled for these guys. You know who your eighth inning guy is going to be. It's going to be Jonathan Bolin. Who's your top lefty? Is it Mayza? Is it Raley? Is it Alvarado? Who's the guy that you want to bring in with runners on base in a tight situation? Is it going to be the rookie McFarland? You're going to hand him that in October? I think you probably are, because you are certainly terrified of giving the ball to Orion Kerkering in a situation like that. I just love the kid's mental toughness. He looks calm out there. He looks like he knows he belongs. And you don't get that sense from Kirkering. You get the sense from Kirkering that when he takes the ball in a situation like that, he's really worried he's going to blow it. And McFarland hasn't had enough experience. He hasn't blown enough games in order to have that mindset just yet. So I love what we're seeing from Alex McFarland through his first 10 big league appearances, making those of us who are calling for him to get called up sooner looking smart. I look stupid in some instances, and in some instances, every once in a while, you know, a squirrel finds a nut. All right, let's take a look at the series coming up here against the Atlanta Braves, a big, big series at Citizens Bank Park coming up this weekend, a four-game series. I mentioned it's a wraparound series, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday. The Phillies, it's been a while. It's been a minute since the Phillies and Braves met. The Phillies lost 5 of 6 against them during their April swoon. They were outscored 32-16. The home series three-game sweep was particularly tough to watch, but the Phillies have a negative 16 run differential against the Braves. But again, this was April. Swept at home April 17th to 19th, and then lost 2 of 3 in Atlanta April 24th to 26th. We're all 5 months older now. We've had lots of spins around the earth since the last time these two teams met. Nola and Painter are pitching so much better. Luzardo was really struggling in April. He's now looking like a Cy Young candidate. And it's just so stupid that these rivals are only playing each other four times in a season, and that it's twice in April and only twice in September, that they've gone this long without facing each other. I hate balanced schedules. I hate having to play everyone. I don't think the Phillies need to play everyone every year. I know that it's supposed to make the schedules more fair. I don't want that. I want to play my divisional opponents more often, because those are the games with the most juice. I don't care about playing the Mariners every year. I don't care about playing the Angels every year, or the Twins, or the Guardians. I don't care. I'd rather play the Braves and the Mets and the Nationals and the Marlins a little bit more often. It's stupid that these teams are only playing each other in April and September this season, and that it has been this long since these two teams have met. It's like, you know, you just meet somebody like your first day of college, and then you go off, and then all of a sudden you meet again like 5 months in. You know, it's just stupid. And this Phillies team is way different than the one that lost 5 of 6 against the Braves during the really rough stretch in mid to late April. We do know what the pitching matchups are going to look like for this series. On Friday night, you will have Chris Sale taking on Christopher Sanchez in an unbelievable pitching matchup. The Phillies struggle against even bad left-handed starters. I don't know what they're going to do with Chris Sale. But the Phillies have Christopher Sanchez, and he pitches great against Atlanta. So this is a matchup where I could see this game going into extra innings 1-1, something like that. That's going to be my early prediction on Friday night. Get ready for extra baseball. I think there's going to be very few runs scored in the Sale versus Sanchez matchup on Friday. The second game of the series will feature Martin Perez against Zach Wheeler. Again, another very interesting Zach Wheeler start. Wheeler usually dominates the Braves. If he struggles against Atlanta, we'll know something continues to be wrong with him. But again, we had a good start against the Angels by Zach Wheeler, and we'll see if he can build on it against a team that he has traditionally dominated. And then you've got Tyler Mahle, a guy the Braves picked up, their number 5 starter at the trade deadline, against Aaron Nola, kind of an even matchup there. And then Bryce Elder, who has been much better here in 2026 for the Phillies, will go up against Jesus Luzardo on Labor Day. You like the Phillies matchup there. And as we're kind of setting the scene for the next few weeks and the end of the season here, let's take a look at the schedules. And the teams the Phillies are competing against have a similarly difficult schedule here down the stretch. Now, the Phillies have the second hardest schedule among every team in baseball. Opponents have a .549 combined winning percentage against so far this year. So the Phillies are going to be going up against teams with a combined .549 winning percentage. They have 2 series, again, 7 games against Atlanta, 3 against Milwaukee, and 3 against Tampa. But those are in the final week of the season, when Milwaukee might have home field advantage all wrapped up. Tampa might also have home field advantage all wrapped up by that point and may not be playing all of their guys. I mean, if Milwaukee's got everything wrapped up, we're not going to see Jacob Mizorowski for more than a couple of innings here and there. So I like that we're getting Milwaukee and Tampa in the final week of the season. They may not have much to play for at that point. So that could make the 549 winning percentage a little less daunting of the combined opponents. So maybe it's not really the second hardest schedule. We'll see. But Atlanta has the third hardest schedule. Their combined opponent winning percentage is 540. And then the Cubs have the fifth hardest schedule remaining at 537. So the Phillies, the Braves, and the Cubs, these three teams battling out for National League East, Wild Card 1, Wild Card 2, they all have similarly difficult schedules. The Dodgers, meanwhile, have the fourth easiest schedule, a combined 472 winning percentage by their opponents. Their toughest games are against the Padres and Marlins here over the last month of the season. But by the way, we've been talking about where the Phillies stand in terms of the standings, and they're four games back of the Braves for the National League East and the number three seed. But the Dodgers have been falling on some harder times. They are only hundredths of a percentage point behind the Braves, or ahead of the Braves, because they've played two fewer games. So the Dodgers have one fewer win and one fewer loss than Atlanta. So essentially, the Braves and the Dodgers are tied for the number two seed in the National League, which means the Phillies are four games behind the number two seed in the National League playoff picture. There's still a chance, guys, they could get a bye past the first round. Now, my heart's torn on that. They have done well in the playoffs when they've had to play the wild card round, better than when they've had the bye. I've never believed that the bye is a bad thing, but maybe you just keep this Phillies team rolling. Maybe you just hope you get that Wild Card 1, or you get the National League East and that third seed so that you got to play that wild card round at home. And maybe you just keep thinking, let's just keep rolling, boys. Let's not stop and think about it. And I think that's what's happened to this team each of the last 2 years. Last year especially, they were rolling into the playoffs. They had a great August. They had a great September. Everything was working. I felt great about how they were playing going into the playoffs. And I think maybe stopping for that wild card bye, you stop and think, that can mess you up. But if you just keep rolling and you get to play against an inferior opponent in the wild card round, maybe that gets you better equipped to play in the division series for this team, for their mindset, for where their brains are at. I don't know. We'll see how it all plays out. You know, just the Braves are going to do what they're going to do. The Cubs are going to do what they're going to do. The Dodgers are going to do what they're going to do. The Phillies just have to win their games. And they can start on the good foot by winning the series against the Braves in Philadelphia this weekend. The biggest series of the season coming up here, Citizens Bank Park, four games here in early September for a spot in the playoffs on the line, and a real battle for the National League East on top. If you're a baseball fan, if you're a Phillies fan, you can't ask for anything better than this. And as the Phillies and Braves meet, the Cubs will be in Miami taking on the Marlins this weekend, and the Dodgers will be hosting the Nationals. So, and up, it's all there in front of the Phillies right now. Destiny is in their hand. Their own destiny is in their hands in terms of winning the National League East. You take care of business against the Atlanta Braves this weekend, and you put yourself in a prime position to win your third straight division title here in 2026. All right, everybody, that's going to do it for this edition of Hittin' Season. Thanks, everybody, for joining in and taking part. If you want to email the show, you can do that. Send us an email, hittinseason@billypenn.com. And if it's a good email and you've got something great to say, you have a question you want to ask, please always feel free to send in questions to the email address. You can also send them to my X account at John Stolness over on X, or on my Blue Sky at John Stolness. I'm on the X a little bit more than the Blue Sky, just to be totally transparent about that. And again, please tell your friends, your family members, and even your mortal enemies about the Hittin' Season podcast. Let them know this is where you can hear all the best analysis about the pennant race. We've been doing this since 2015, gang, so we know what we're doing here at Hittin' Season. And make sure to stay tuned for Justin and Liz's show here at the end of the week, previewing the Atlanta Braves series a little bit more in depth. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. We'll talk to you next time right here on Hittin' Season.